This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about medicine and money. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Money affects patient care in many ways. People are worried about the price tag on procedures and doctor's visits. But finances come into play in other ways as well. They shape what research is funded and which treatments get developed in the first place. And every new breakthrough can create a windfall for some and financial losses for others. Grant Hill reports.
Infectious disease specialist Nina Kim remembers when news of a revolutionary new hepatitis C treatment first reached her clinic in Seattle.
For me, it was like a burden or a weight had lifted off. It was finally the breakthrough we were waiting for.
This was about 10 years ago, and hepatitis C, a blood-borne virus that can eventually cause liver cancer or failure, was killing more people in the U.S. than HIV. Many of Nina's patients were on the margins of society. Older folks who received a blood transfusion before the Red Cross started screening for the virus, and younger folks caught in the maelstrom of addiction. The only treatment available back then took a long time. It was not highly effective, and it had terrible side effects. So bad that Nina had trouble getting her patients to stick with it.
We have to hold their hands through almost a year of treatment, and only then, in one and two, we have to tell them that the treatment didn't work. So I had a number of patients where I was, you know, we're telling them, just hang on, we know this is coming. We have oral, just pure oral therapy coming down the road that is supposed to be shorter and is supposed to be much more successful.
The new treatments were Sovaldi and Harvani, made by the pharmaceutical company Gilead. They took years, and likely hundreds of millions of dollars, to get to market. And they lived up to the hype.
We were able to, with pretty well-tolerated treatment, cure the vast majority. That's over 95% of patients who completed treatment ended up with what we call a sustained virologic response, which is, you know, we look for the virus and we don't find it.
The breakthrough had come thanks in part to the explosion of knowledge in the field of genomic medicine, which had opened new avenues into treating previously untouchable diseases. But the treatment came with a hefty and controversial price tag, more than $80,000 back then. Despite that, the promising new cure for hepatitis C, along with a wave of renewed interest in gene therapies, set off alarm bells in the financial world. In 2018, global investment banking firm Goldman Sachs released a report on biotech, stating that the introduction of Harvani and Sovaldi represented the, quote, long-awaited optimization of science, and that one-time cures had tremendous value for patients and society, but it cautioned that, quote, such treatments offer a very different outlook with regard to recurring revenue versus chronic therapies, and could present a challenge for sustained cash flow. Because, as the report indicates, more people cured of hepatitis C should mean less people passing it on to others. Soon, hepatitis C would be a thing of the past, and that could be a problem for Gilead and its revolutionary drugs. In the news, this translated to the headline, "Is curing patients a sustainable business model?"
Yeah, I'm familiar with the Goldman Sachs memo, and I know it did create a little bit of a kerfuffle when it was released.
Randall Vaechter is an associate director of research at St. George's University. He edited a book titled The Economics of Diseases and Cures, and he understands why so many people have pointed to this Goldman Sachs report as proof of their worst fears about big pharma, but he disagrees.
I really perceive it to be an over-exaggeration or misreading of the report.
Just a year before the report was released, the first gene therapy for cancer was approved. Genomic medicine was gaining steam. And it seemed like a win for everyone involved, patients, obviously, but investors as well. New treatments for a large slate of diseases should mean higher returns. But Goldman Sachs saw a hitch in this plan based on the case study of Harvani and Sovaldi.
The memo does mention that existing therapeutic markets like ongoing treatments for chronic disease could be disrupted by these new one-shot cures, as they call them. And they give the example of Gilead's hepatitis C vaccine.
Technically, the pills are curative treatments, not actually vaccines that prevent hepatitis C, but they definitely were revolutionary. The company made $10 billion in revenue from its hepatitis C cures the year after they were released in 2014. But that number quickly peaked the year after. Would declining revenue still be enough to cover the costs it took to make the drugs possible in the first place? Definitely, says Randall. But pharmaceutical companies don't just care about making their money back. They care about making a ton of money back for shareholders.
We live in a world of limited resources. And so economic analysis is necessarily one of costs versus benefits.
That means picking which diseases to cure that represent the most profitable investment. The cost of developing a new drug can vary from $300 million to $4.5 billion. These numbers are often regarded as trade secrets. But Randall says, for the most part, the top pharmaceutical companies spend anywhere from 14 to 30% of their revenue on research and development. This R&D is often built on more fundamental research done by publicly funded health agencies like the National Institutes of Health, the NIH. That ratio of taxpayer dollars to corporate cash spent on R&D is anywhere from a 50-50 split to one-third public, two-thirds private.
If the big 10 pharma companies made $75 billion in profit in 2023, but it's 2.5 times more money they're putting in to the R&D, then one could argue that $20 billion in annual corporate profits among the top 10 biggest companies are the result of public funding through institutions like the NIH.
A recent investigation found the federal government contributed over $60 million toward the development of Gilead's hepatitis C treatments. How that stacks up to private funding is unclear. But one thing is certain. It's most often big pharma that gets to choose where their dollars go in terms of clinical trials, which diseases to focus on. And if you're going to spend $1 billion creating a cure, you want to get the most bang for your buck. The conclusion, according to that Goldman Sachs report, is that big pharma should spend their money targeting diseases that aren't infectious and that have huge replenishing patient pools, diseases like cancer. Those are the kinds of cures that are good for business, the kinds of cures companies should race to be the first to develop. But it's not just this profit-seeking selection method that stands in the way of new cures.
It's not true that companies are no longer interested in cures, but there are additional challenges.
Jason Schaffrin is a health economist and senior manager at FTI Consulting Center for Healthcare Economics and Policy. Jason says many of those challenges revolve around pricing. If just one dose of a company's new drug will cure your disease, that means insurance companies will have to pay a lot of money for this cure to cover the cost of its development, rather than having that same amount spread out over a patient's lifetime.
It may be a good deal, the kind of return on investment for patients in terms of the health benefits relative to the cost may be very high, but that is a challenge to just say, hey, normally we're going to pay for this a little bit over a bunch of years, and politically that's a lot easier versus, hey, we can pay a bunch now, but then you don't pay anything later and you're saving a lot of money. Another issue too is kind of the long run outcomes.
Basically, how do we know an experimental gene therapy will actually permanently cure your disease? Clinical trials can last up to 5 years. Typically, that's a sufficient amount of time to prove whether a treatment works or not. But if a treatment becomes no longer effective, you can always stop taking it and stop paying for it. But cures are supposed to last forever, so they're priced that way.
For cures, for things that you sell in gene therapies that you're taking once, if you're kind of paying for this, assuming it's going to work for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and it ends up working 6 or 7, well, then you've way overpaid.
You don't just need buy-in from pharmaceutical companies to pick the drug. You also need buy-in from insurance companies, too, to cover it. A problem even for regular treatments, let alone experimental cures.
So I think it's not that they're reluctant. It's just that many of the cures are kind of one-off things. And some of them also are for orphan diseases. So, you know, if you cure some disease that affects a small number of people as well, that also can be challenging because your market size is less. So I'd say certainly interested, but there are additional logistical and economic issues from a cure compared to a typical chronic disease treatment that you take for a bunch of time.
Even with all these roadblocks, cures like Gilead's hepatitis C drugs still do emerge. Whether people can get their hands on them is another thing. Here's infectious disease specialist Nina Kim again.
Apart from patient-level factors like social instability and competing priorities, I think our health system, it's just not equipped to be very patient-centered. I mean, there's so many aspects that are wrong with it.
Nina says, thus far, the future prophesized by that infamous Goldman Sachs memo, that this cure could mean fewer future patients with Hep C, has yet to come true. Despite how well those treatments work, the opioid epidemic has caused the number of acute hepatitis C cases in the United States to double since their approval.
That story was reported by Grant Hill.